Welcome back to Arts About, everybody.
The show about art, that it's a work of art in itself.
Yes, it is. Mark, good morning, Mark.
Good morning,
Stewart.
Sally.
Sally Bailiu here, and we're teamed with Brody on the buttons today. Welcome to the show. Arts About is, of course, brought to you by the generosity of the McClelland Sculpture Park and Gallery and facilitated by the Bendigo Bank Studio. And you're here with me, as I said, Sally Bailiu and Mark Stewart this week. John's still away. He's on his way back from a very successful exhibition, apparently, in Sydney, which is rather wonderful to hear. And he'll be back next week to tell us exactly how many swimming pools he managed to...
Not many.
No. Actually, I did speak to him, I have to say, this morning. And he is so far on his way back that he's in Melbourne and he's wallowing in a pool in Melbourne.
In a hotel, yes.
That's just rather good. I'm also going to be talking with Gillian Murray, one of the performers in a production called Le Mans Anglaise, which is on at 45 downstairs until the end of the week. So we'll be finding out a little bit about that extraordinary production. I'm also going to be talking to artist Penny Byrne, whose show Brutal opened at Linda New Art in St Kilda this week. And Mark, what are you going to talk about?
The future.
Oh, yeah, that's succinct. The future. That's great. Mm. Okay, fantastic. I look forward to that. Cliff's going to come in later as well, actor, blogger, writer and local identity. He returns to bring his view from the cliff. And while we get Penny Byrne on the phone to talk about Brutal, here's Ain't No Wheels on the Ship by Patsy Cline. Artist Penny Byrne joins us this morning to discuss her latest exhibition opening at Linden Gallery in Ackland Street, St Kilda. Linden New Art's a contemporary art gallery and it's housed in the beautiful Victorian building on Ackland Street and is home to a wide and challenging forum of contemporary art and also supports and mentors young and emerging important voices. 2016 was a brutal year for many, and in her exhibition of the same name, these works are Penny's personal response in an exhibition, staged there that runs between now, I think it's opened already, through to the 8th of March. Penny's an Australian artist from Mildura originally, who lives in Melbourne, and her works are sculptural and incorporate many mediums. They're politically charged and often funny as well. She doesn't shy from addressing some of the big issues, including climate change, melting polar ice caps, the bombardment of Aleppo, the Royal Commissioner to Child, sex abuse and the ivory change. What will she be saying about the new President of the United States, I wonder? Penny, she's on the line with me this morning. Penny Byrne, good morning. Thanks for talking to us on Arts About.
Hi, Sally. Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Penny, we see many artists using their practice to voice concern about the world these days, politically and environmentally. Are you angry about what's going on in the world at the moment?
Oh, angry, frustrated, a little bit bamboozled as well, perhaps. Last year was just such a full-on year, wasn't it? And so many people, when I talked to them about their feelings about last year, people were just overwhelmed quite often. And I guess that's where I got the name for the exhibition, Brutal, because it felt like a pretty brutal year for me as well. I know with social media these days, we can look at our news feed on Facebook or Instagram and see lots and lots of horrific images, and it's very easy just to scroll past all of that, isn't it, you know, and just get overwhelmed. And I suppose I was feeling quite overwhelmed last year as well. And so this new body of work is really my response to how I was feeling.
Yes, I think overwhelmed and sometimes desensitised. Sometimes there is so much of it, it is very hard to respond. Tell us about Brutal and how it came to be, and is it a specific injustice that you're attacking in this work?
Well, I think when you use the word desensitised, that really sums up how I ended up at the end of last year. And it was particularly, I think, around the bombing of Aleppo. The Syrian civil war has been going on for quite some time. There was so much in my social media, and I literally did start scrolling past it. And I think for me as an artist, to be turning away like that was not how I usually operate. I usually look at and engage with issues that really annoy me and get myself, you know, get me all fired up. And so I turned back and I started looking again, I think. And so that's what these works are. So Brutal is the title of the exhibition itself, and then there are all sorts of works in it that are addressing all the issues that have, you know, I've decided to really re-engage with again. And one of them I find, you know, quite timely is I've finally made an artwork about childhood sexual abuse in the Catholic Church. I've for years not really wanted to make a work about that. It's such a sensitive issue, isn't it?
Yeah,
and
yes.
Anyway, who would have thought? But this week the Royal Commission is now calling a number of archbishops to give evidence, and it's going to be a really full-on 3 weeks in the Royal Commission. And ironically, that's how long my exhibition is going to last, right through the very same time. So you can't really pick the timing of making artwork. I mean, I finished this particular artwork at the end of last year, but timing-wise, the world, you know, conspires in interesting ways, doesn't it?
Yes, it absolutely does. Now, of course, radio is a very difficult way to be talking about the visual arts. Perhaps you might just explain, I mean, I mentioned a little earlier that you work across lots of different mediums, but
yep.
Brutal is specifically, you're working with ceramics. Can you explain what the pieces are?
Yes, well, I'm actually a trained ceramics conservator and restorer, and I do continue to work in that field as well. And my artwork has come out of that way of working, I suppose. So what I do is I find vintage porcelain figurines, often from op shops, and I get them on eBay as well, that are quite kitsch usually. Often they were mass-produced in the 1950s after the Second World War in Taiwan, places like that. So they're copying the really good Meissen porcelain and Royal Doulton, but they're not the real thing.
And familiar to lots of people because they're probably in lots of our Nana's houses.
That's right. So a lot of people say that. They say Nana had one of those on her mantelpiece. And so these figurines are very familiar to people, but then what I do is I use my ceramics conservation and restoration skills and knowledge of materials, that sort of thing, to reconfigure these figurines. I often cut them up, I break them, I add things to them, I paint them with different colours, I paint camouflage clothes on them, or I give them little plastic Action Man guns, or in the case of the work about Aleppo, you know, some lovely red enamel paint, which becomes blood. So I don't hold back. And so these figurines look quite familiar and quite, people feel like they know what they're looking at. But then when you go up and look at them more closely, you suddenly realise that actually they're not what you thought they were, and they're actually packing quite a punch. But you don't realise that till you're quite close to them. So it's often interesting seeing people responding to them, because by the time they've got really close to it, the issue that I'm talking about is very, very present. And it's a great way to get people to think about some of these really difficult issues in a I guess quite an engaging way, if that's possible.
Mm-hmm. Now you are just back from a couple of years in both Shanghai and also Venice. I think your work is represented in both those countries at various galleries, isn't it?
Well, I've been working with Urban Art Projects, which is a big company based in Brisbane and Shanghai, to make some large-scale bronze works. So my involvement in Shanghai was actually going there to make the bronzes. They've got an incredible workshop in China, and the artisans there that I was working with to make the bronze works are just amazing to work with. And then with Venice, I was very lucky to be invited to be in an exhibition for the 2015 Venice Biennale, and it was curated by the Hermitage Museum in St. Petersburg, and artists from all over the world were invited by the St. Petersburg Hermitage Museum to actually make glass artworks with the artisans on Murano, just off the island of Murano.
Yeah.
And so it was an amazing experience. I got to go to Murano and work with the glass maestros from Berengo Studios and create an incredible artwork in glass and metal for this exhibition for the Venice Biennale in 2015.
Wow, that's very exciting. Well, you're back in Australia now, and I see from your website that you've got some pretty amazing exhibitions coming up this year with equally potent subject matter. Can you tell us what's coming up for you after this wonderful exhibition, Brutal, at Linden New Art?
Yes, well, just quickly with Brutal, this is my first solo show in Melbourne for a couple of years, so I'm really excited and really it's been fantastic that Linden has given me this opportunity to have a solo show and to be making some small-scale ceramic works again. But then, yes, I'm going to be doing a massive installation about people's addiction to oil for the Climb Art Festival, which is a climate change and art festival in April this year. And then I've got another solo show in Berlin in October with Michael Reed Berlin Gallery, and that's going to be, again, small-scale ceramics, figurines, looking at the European migrant crisis. So there are a couple of things. I've also got to work in the Castlemaine State Festival in an exhibition up in Castlemaine in March, so that's going to be exciting. And a couple of other things that are just waiting to see if they're going to happen, but if they do, that could be very exciting as well. But watch this space.
Yeah, fantastic. Obviously, yeah. Watch this space.
Plenty happening.
Yep. That's terrific. Well, this exhibition sounds like a great start for this year for you. I'm really looking forward to see it. If you don't mind, I'll put a couple of images up on our Facebook page so that
that'd be great.
Listeners can see some of the work. There's one particular piece that perhaps we might, if you wouldn't mind describing, because you do have one of Donald Trump in this selection.
I do, yes.
What's he called?
It's called Putin's Poodle. So, since I made this work, things have shifted and changed. When I made it, he was still hadn't been inaugurated as president yet, and there was all that talk about Putin and, you know, the involvement of Russia in potentially affecting the election results. And then he's now appointed a Secretary of State that has really strong business ties to Russia as well. And so the idea of Trump being Putin's poodle was being bandied around a couple of months ago. And so this work is talking about that. But since then, of course, there's all sorts of other things that have happened that are giving me ideas for new work. So it's going to be a very fruitful 4 years, I think.
Well, as you say, watch this space. Brutal is on at Linden New Art. It's open now and it runs through till the 8th of March. It's open now and runs through till the 8th of March. And it's at Ackland Street Gallery in St Kilda. Thanks so much for talking to us today, Penny Byrne. It's a great pleasure.
Thanks very much for having me.
See you later.
Bye.
Up next, episode 9 of Island King. I can't remember what its title is, but it's bound to be fabulous. Well, it's time for John Gone this week, and in fact it's Mark on this morning, as we mentioned a little earlier, because John's swanning about in a swimming pool somewhere.
In Melbourne,
yeah.
Not too far away.
The future, Mark.
Yes, I'm going to talk about the future for a little while here. It's called the 4IR, which is the Fourth Industrial Revolution, which we are in right
We're
at this
in
moment.
Right now.
So to begin with, 3D printing, which is already in place, and we can
very hard for some of us to wrap our heads around, actually.
Well, I'll be able to explain to you in a very good fashion here. So we've got bioprinting of organic tissues is already being used for drug testing. Printed body parts will be available within a few years, so transsexuals will be very happy about that. Clothing, especially shoes, you will scan your feet with your smartphone, Sally, and use the digital file to 3D print a bespoke perfect pair just for your feet.
That is very exciting.
Very exciting, which will be delivered to your home by drone if you don't have a 3D printer in situ.
It's going to be mad up there in the skies, isn't it?
But they all know each other. That's also, I'm going to speak about it, the internet of everything, of all things, will be that every car and every drone will know each other and will go within its space. It's like be like birds flying in formation. They never hit each other.
No, they don't.
No,
and
they
fish.
Don't. Nor fish. Fish, yeah. Beautiful. There you go. So when you want to go down to Dee's in Dramana for a lovely coffee and cake, you will instruct a personal robot to summon a battery-powered driverless transportation pod, which
Which we all dreamt about when we watched the Jetsons.
The Jetsons, exactly. Mm. Yeah, and drivers and pods will all but eliminate car ownership and accidents. Mm. Roads will be freed up. Insurance companies are scared very much. And car manufacturers are very much concerned as well. Because the big people like Apple, Google, Microsoft and Amazon are all making transportation pods. So there won't be any more cars.
This is a revolution.
It's happening now. Okay, it's happening right now.
Wow,
and
that's
it's going
very...
to be so you won't have to pay insurance. You won't even own a car. You won't need a garage. You won't have so parking spots. It'll be free. The fact that they're building another lane in the Tullamarine Freeway is a complete waste of time and energy, basically, because this is all going to change.
But how quickly?
Well, it's going to be from 2020, they say. That's already, trucks, tractors can be completely self-driven. So it's all happening now.
I did see a fabulous thing in a magazine just a little while ago. Well, in fact, it was probably on the internet. And it was about ambulances, paramedic response vehicles that were drones.
Right. Okay. It's all going to happen. So think about Kodak in 1998, mm-hmm. where they had 170,000 employees over the world. Within 2 or 3 years, nothing left. This is what it's going to be like, okay? Unless people are really, they have been forewarned. So what's happened to photography is going to happen with education, agriculture, doctors, lawyers. Algorithms can do whatever job a lawyer can do, and with much more database,
wow.
Okay? So when you go down to D's and you'll order a steak, perhaps, mm-hmm. you want to have there, it will be a laboratory steak, which is already we're already doing that. People are not very happy about it, but that's what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. So no more cattle being living torturous, horrible lives just mm-hmm. so we can eat our meat. All the land will be freed up from the cattle and the sheep mm-hmm. and the 25 billion chickens that we eat mm-hmm. Every year. So this is going to be a massive change as well in the way we produce food.
Mm.
Be very interesting.
It's also interesting, all these industries that are being altered so profoundly and the workforces that are going to no longer be required. What is going to happen to the human being?
Well,
are you going to end up navel-gazing?
You've been reading Sapiens. You should read his second one, Homo Deus, and he talks about the fact that people are no longer, democracy and the human rights and all the rest of it came into being because business and armies needed people.
Yes.
They do not no longer need them. So people are going to have to be really careful about how they produce, how they present themselves to the future, whether they're going to have any value or not.
Absolutely.
It's a big question.
Well, maybe the population will slowly decline, which is as it should be, because seriously, the Earth cannot sustain it.
Well, we've been saying this since the 70s, and if you remember in the 70s how they were talking about there would be no food, this guy, Nicholas Borlaug, who was a agricultural specialist in wheat, made these strains of wheat which could grow in any area, mm-hmm. basically, and that saved the world. And we don't hear about these people very often, but the world can take more and more people. It's just whether you can deal with all the traffic, which will be dealt with all the transportation pods. So maybe we will be able to live together, but what are people going to do? That's the problem.
That's what I mean. Navel gazing.
Well,
So hopefully there will be a mental revolution as well.
Well, this is what they're saying. Because of the fact that we can put computer interfaces into our brains, we're going to be able to discover things about our brains, which apparently we're only using 3 or 4% of it, that we've never known existed. So perhaps we can become gods in that sense. But that's another story altogether.
Oh, yeah. We've only got 3 minutes. So
now think of Uber. Yes. A software company that has become the biggest taxi company in the world without owning any cars, okay?
Yes.
Airbnb, the biggest hotel company in the world, no hotels. So this is where we're going. Virtual and augmented realities, which is what people are going to be doing with their time. Next step, interfaces between humans and computers involving immersive environments, holographic readouts, and digitally produced overlays for mixed reality experiences. Soon, whole communities will sit together, lost in a world of headset goggles, transported to a wilderness location, sporting arena, concert hall, and even be able to enjoy teledildonic sex.
Wow.
That's an interesting word, huh?
Yes, it is. But funnily enough, I know an artist who's been experimenting with that quite a few years ago, maybe a decade or so ago.
With what? Teledildonic?
Sex, yeah.
Really? What was his name?
Michael Bladen.
Okay. Were you involved?
No, I was a friend. I was bore witness to it.
A voyeur, you mean? So when you think about Michael Jackson, they did a concert tour of Michael Jackson after his death, mm-hmm. made with holograms.
Right.
So lots of that's going to be going on. They're bringing back, you'll be able to make love with Marilyn Monroe if that's your thing. So
yeah, anyway, I'm sure it's a lot of people's fantasies.
Yeah, so anyway, biotechnologies, rapid advances in genetic engineering, resequencing, therapeutics, as well as human computational interfaces and synthetic biology.
Mm.
It's all amazing stuff, I think. So
it is amazing stuff, but is it going to be good?
Well, this is not going to be the question.
No, it's not the question.
We hope that we always hope that good prevails. Mm. It seems to have done, but then when you listen to people like Penny Byrne, last year for her, some people was a brutal year. I had a wonderful year, but yeah. I didn't think too much about what was going on in Aleppo. But if I was going to think about it, I would have gone there and perhaps be a paramedic or something.
Yeah.
But it's a big question. Now, I just wanted to say, I was talking about being a sculptor before, and how for me, a hammer and a chisel are the ultimate tools, mm-hmm. because you've just got one in one hand and one in the other. It makes a chipping noise. That's it. And it's something which has been going on for 5,000 years.
Yes,
I can't see how that's going to change, even though you have all these amazing tools now, which just create enormous dirt and dust. Then we go on to Jeff Koons, who has a five-axis computing machine, which makes all his sculptures. He has five of them going 24 hours a day, whipping out his sculptures.
Oh.
So look.
Where is the meaning?
Well, the meaning is he's being very successful and sending his six children to very good schools.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's all he cares about.
Perhaps. Dear, oh dear. Well, right. That's an amazing list of facts.
So what we've got to deal with in the future is the concept of failure,
yep.
and how that's going to be used for the future, and whether we can fail well.
Let's go out considering that one then. Thank you very much, Mark.
Pleasure.
45 Downstairs is once again demonstrating its commitment to independent theatre with its second reprisal of Marguerite Duras' Le Monde Anglaise, starring Gillian Murray and Rob Meldrum. On until Sunday the 19th, so it's only this week left, this extraordinary play has us descend into the private world of husband and wife Pierre and Claire Lannes, an outwardly normal couple whose lives come under the brutal microscope under the writer Marguerite Duras' hand in this riveting play that deals with the true and very gruesome discovery of a series of body parts without a head that appears on different trains in France in 1949. Director Laurence Strangio has pared back the accoutrements of this two-hander to a couple of chairs and a single lighting state, and the audience is split in two facing each other on raked seating like juries, in front of which an interrogation takes place. I have with us this morning one of the performers, Gillian Murray, who has performed in this piece and won a Green Room Award, I understand, in 2015. She's going to talk to us today. Good morning, Gillian. Thank you so much for coming on to Arts About.
Oh, thank you, Sally, and thank you for that a wonderful description of the piece. That's terrific.
It is really rather remarkable, and I think so much in the French fashion, this story of this couple leads us through an interior life of the lives of these pair, and we learn not so much about the murder or why the head of Claire's deaf and dumb cousin was never found, but a lot about the hidden cruelties of the indifference and that can often go unnoticed in a marriage, and the effects of the accrual of disappointment and despair, I suppose. Is that what?
Yes. With a few laughs in there as well.
Absolutely.
Believe it or not.
Yes, which were really kind of surprising. I really didn't expect to be able to find humour in there because it is so terribly grim.
And isn't that the wonderful power of Marguerite Duras, that she has this very dry wit that under those bleak circumstances, and I guess it is that thing sometimes, if we're not, that the edge between laughter and tears is often so close, and that she's able to switch us to either of those just with a single phrase. So it's just a delight to play.
Is it really a delight? Because I just wondered how incredibly taxing it must be, because these sort of levels that you go to, you are clearly going through some extraordinary sort of internal moments to actually reach the places that you do.
Yes, and it is that interesting conundrum, you know, like if there are dark places and emotional places that my character goes to. But at the same time, how thrilling for a performer to be going through that seesaw. And it is that very bizarre thing that I keep thinking about so often now as I'm performing this piece, now for its fourth return season. Our audience is so close to us. And so I'm deeply into the role, but at the same time I'm thinking, oh, that person has just moved their foot.
I wondered about that, because I was in the front row and I did I found myself crossing and uncrossing my legs a couple of times and I thought, because we are in such close proximity.
It demands every single fiber in your being of focus, but because you're human, you're still, you know, there are things that happen around you, but of course, you know, you're not blind, so you notice them, but then you immediately go back, or at the same time, you don't even divert from what you're doing, but you have this kind of a couple of tracks playing all at the same time. So I found that, and continue to find that absolutely fascinating about the role of a performer, and of course it's just brought into sharp focus because our audience is particularly in the front row, as you would have experienced, they are so close.
It's so interesting. I mean, it is so pared back, as I think I mentioned. There's there's two chairs. There is nothing for you to be hiding behind. And in fact, we're looking across you at the other side of the audience. You're in a it's almost a little gladiatorial, isn't it? The cavalcade in the centre.
And I loved your description of the jury, either side almost.
Yes, it was really like, look, we were on one side of the audience looking at the other, and that's exactly what they looked like on rack seating on the other side.
Yeah, and it is that, I think that's what's so unusual about this piece, is that it is stripped back. It is just totally reliant on performance. There is a very, very simple costume change, but basically, and this seemingly, if you just say, well, two actors sit in a chair and then at half time they get up and they change costume and change chairs, you think, well, do I really want to pay my money for that? But that's what seems to get everybody in. It's the simplicity. That, you know, wonderful, is it Mies van der Rohe quote, you know, less is more. When it is so less, it has to be as perfect as we can make it. Because there's nothing, as you said, there's absolutely nothing to hide behind. There's no music, there's no special costumes, there's no significant lighting. As I think I'm recalling, one of the reviews said, it's the essence of theatre, pure theatre.
Absolutely. I'm fascinated to know what it must like for you, be for you each time, to actually be inhabiting the mind of somebody like this.
It's thrilling. I love it. And what I enjoy so much is the logic of her mind. So she's very sharp, and there are times when Claire, my character, is actually interviewing the interviewer.
Yes.
You know, why would I say that? You know, is this what you want me to say? And right towards the end, when there's the realization that this interview is going to come to a conclusion, and finally the elephant in the room is stated when she asks, so, you know, what would you say if I said they were going to put me in the mental hospital in Versailles? And he says, yes. Rather than emotionally reacting to that, I react to that in a very logical, sharp way, which is again to question him why he's questioning me about where the head is.
Yes, and we don't find out where the head is. Do you wonder that at all? I mean, or does it really not matter?
Look, I think it's one of those things that Duras puts out there to increase the curiosity of the audience in terms of the whodunit and why it was done. And I think the really interesting question is why Claire did it. And to add to that, did Claire really do it?
Yes, well, that's absolutely...
We know she dismembered the body, but I think the theory around why there's no disclosure of the head, if I, the character, reveal where that head is, then basically it's shut away, it's closed down, the case is concluded, I'm shut away, I'm read as a mad woman, no one ever speaks to me again.
Yes, so there's some salvation for her in
yes,
that.
Yes, it's a way of, because I only realised that she's dead when I see the head, as I described to him, I think she goes back to her religious roots and she says the prayers for the dead, and this is very precious for her. He doesn't want anyone to know where that is, because it will be, dug up and all of those things. So it's a fascinating play around, I think, two key questions. How we perceive things, because you get, first of all, the husband's point of view, then you get the wife's point of view. So it really questions perception and fact. And as we know, sometimes our perception is so strong that we feel it's stronger than fact.
Yes, that's
and
right.
It also questions what is madness.
I'd say that actually gets right to the absolute core of it. Thank you so much for talking to us today, Gillian Murray. La Mont Anglaise is on at 45 Downstairs for this week only, closing on the 19th. Go if you possibly can manage it. Thank you so much for talking to us today on Arts About, Gillian Murray. Actor, blogger, writer, critic and local identity Cliff Ellen joins us again this morning to give us his view from the Cliff. Good morning, Cliff.
Good morning, Sally. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Cliff. Lovely to see you.
My first kiss was a masterclass. Lasted 2 hours. And I was very thankful to that lady. She taught me a lot, and I sort of realised the advantage of being a good kisser in years to come.
Yes.
There's a lot of films floating about, isn't there?
Yes, well, Cliff, of course, we saw you down there at the Short Film Festival on your way to the VIP tent. I never found out. Did you make your way in?
No.
Oh, you didn't?
I wasn't on the list.
Oh, that's so...
But I suspect I was on the list from the other chap at the other end of the important people in the tent. I didn't really want to go in because I didn't know anybody, so what's the point?
So did you stay and watch a few films after you spoke to us?
Yeah, well, I didn't agree with the winner. No.
Oh, didn't you? You didn't like that?
Mm. Quirky.
Was very, very quirky.
A little bit of sex. Yep. Always makes it interesting.
Yep.
But the one you just mentioned was better.
Slingshot.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, well, it won everything, about.
I can imagine people liking Ricky Martin or whatever it was called.
Yeah, Nathan loves Ricky Martin.
Yeah, because, as I say, a little bit of a sexual.
Well, it was sexual, but it was also a really, really unexpected perspective on a film about a carer for a disabled person, I thought.
Yeah, that's one way to look at it. I just thought it was a nice idea. Mm. And it was good, quirky, and in a repressed sexual society, it's always interesting.
So where did the sex come in with
the carer, the mother, or you assume that it is the mother of Nathan. Nathan, the film begins as Nathan's on the floor and he's fallen out of his chair, and you can only hear the mother calling a neighbour to come in and help her. And
topless.
Yeah, she gets the next scene is the neighbour comes in and they get Nathan back up on the chair, and she virtually throws herself at this man, and there's this rather extraordinary sexual congress that occurs in the room as the man escapes and she has a cigarette and puts the music on the Ricky Martin soundtrack, which makes Nathan really, really happy. That's it. It was really great. It was a great film.
Okay, it was great. Six out of ten. 10 for me.
Okay. And the, when, and Slingshot, you'd have given what?
Probably 8.
Yeah. Okay.
There's quite a few Aussie films at the moment. Actually, films are sort of the flavour of the month. There's a couple of good ones. Lion's very good. Manchester by the Sea is very good. They're
is
both
it?
On at the moment, if you're interested.
Yeah, I need to go and see a movie.
But they're both 4-star plus films.
Right,
on
yes.
a 4 out of 5 basis. But as for the new Aussie films coming up, there's no mention of Shane Jacobson in the Aussie films coming up, which is a relief for someone like me.
Well, I wanted to ask you, did you think he did a good job as MC?
Well, there are a couple of he always wants to interview the important people. I saw Carolyn up there. And
Carolyn Waters from Open Channel.
She was going to interview the director, but
Wayne Blair.
He sort of did a shifty thing, and he was the one that interviewed Wayne Blair. Look, he's very popular. Everyone loves him. That's good. I tend to think that he hones in on people that are important. So that's just my opinion. Nothing else.
Yeah. No. Well, I think he was probably driven to that by the organisation.
Probably. The audience love him. That's the main thing. What have
he
we
was
got?
Very competent, I have to say. As watching, I thought, watching the show, that he managed the situation. He managed the stage very well.
He did. He did. Perhaps he'll have a shave next year. Flammable Children, directed by Stephen Elliott, starring Guy Pearce and Kylie Minogue.
In
Queensland, coming of age period piece in DY in the mid-70s, looking all right. Three Summers, director Ben Elton, Deborah Marmon's in it, Magda Sobanski, of course, and Michael Caton, who's now famous yet again. Incidentally, here's something, Harry Potter, South Park and Teletubbies are all 20 years old, right?
That is incredible.
I've never seen any of them.
I can't believe Harry Potter is 20 years old, really?
Well, they are. According to my research, I like the word. Do you like the word research?
Well, it sounds important.
I read about research every day in the paper.
Yeah.
They research everything.
Yeah, you
the Book of Mormon, of course, has got rave reviews. Everybody
raves. We were just talking, Brodie, Mark and I, a little bit earlier. They described to me what the Book of Mormon is actually about. I had no idea. It sounds really fascinating and I want to go see it.
And very funny.
Have you seen
it? So I believe.
No, I'm not going to town yet. It's too hard. I've got to go into town at a funeral. That's enough for me. But a friend of mine saw Mormon in New York. I mentioned on this show some time back.
Yes, you did.
But he also saw Matilda and he thought Matilda was better by a mile. But there again, it's all
taste, isn't it?
Sort of thing. Actually, our people were over there in New York, weren't they? The Sydney Theatre Company. Production of The Present starred Kate,
of course.
Our Kate and Richard Roxburgh.
Yes.
Which got a bit of an ordinary review.
Oh, did it? I thought it had probably done rather well.
Sprawling and confused adaptation of a sprawling and confused play.
Has it been here in Australia at all?
I'm not sure.
I don't think it has. I'm sure you would have heard that.
It's strange. You would think it would have gone on in Sydney. Mm. But anyway, that's just. That's just New York. Who knows what they think, sort of thing.
That's right.
And Nicole Kidman, by the way, is very good in Lion. If you haven't seen it.
No, I haven't.
Yeah. Life-affirming. Moving.
Oh,
Nicole,
my.
Good. That's good. I'm glad.
Glad for her too.
She's had a downs and ups.
She's picked some odd films.
Did you see Newsweek?
Newsweek?
Yes, when she's playing, is it called Newsweek? She's playing a meteor girl who becomes...
No, I didn't see that.
She was about 25 or 26, and she was brilliant in that.
Oh, okay.
Whereas in all those other movies, she wasn't so
I saw Newsfront.
No, that was a little bit before that, I think.
That was a great
film. What are you doing for the rest of the afternoon?
All the better films are in black and white. I don't know why.
Don't know why.
Today, Barry Cassidy's back. So.
Barry Cassidy?
Yeah, they're the insiders or the outsiders, whatever they're called, on the ABC. I taped it.
And you're going back to watch that?
See if there's anything I missed
on
the political
front.
That's about all.
Fabulous.
Oh, no, I've got a lot more to say, but you're telling me.
I know, we're just running out of time. We've just gotten... Hey, a song.
A song? Yeah, well, you know, The Little Sparrow.
The Little Sparrow. Edith,
I was going to ask you to do The Proclaimers, but... I thought, I'm going back a bit too far. Although, Je Ne Regrette, Mark can
Yeah, Mark, can you announce
this? Generic Harian.
Fabulous.
Now, beautiful, isn't it?
It's really terrific. Thanks for coming in, Cliff.
Pleasure. I'll see you in a fortnight.
Fabulous.
You know she was a prostitute before she was a singer.
I'm quite happy with prostitutes.
No, I'm sure. Who can sing?
Well, of course, that brings in the sound of the news, doesn't it? It's time for that. McCulloch and McCulloch at Whistlewood Gallery invite you to a special evening of Aboriginal art, opening in conversation. There's a film screening of Puttaparri and The Rainmakers on Saturday, February the 18th, 6 till 10 p.m. Go to the Whistlewood website and have a look and see what that is. McClelland Sculpture Park and Gallery are having another fundraising Twilight Jazz event at Cruden Farm this weekend, Saturday the 18th, between 4 and 8. Special guest MC Derek Gill will present another of Melbourne's finest jazz groups, Pearly Shells and Ultrafox. So bring along a picnic basket, a rug, table and chairs, and listen and dance to the best jazz in the extraordinary ambience of the Rose Gardens at Cruden Farm. A selection of refreshments will also be available for purchase on the day, so go to the gallery website for details.
RMIT Design Hub are hosting an exhibition called High Risk Dressing, Critical Fashion, on Friday the 17th of February to Saturday 18th of March at the Design Hub Project Rooms 1 and 2, Level 2, RMIT Building 100. God almighty.
No, don't worry about that. That's just at RMIT. Okay. Yeah. And I might say that there's be quite a lot of films in there from the and information about the Fashion Design Council, who were Robert Buckingham, Kate Durham and Mark Pierce, who started that in 1983. And there'll be some interesting stuff, I would think.
You think so?
I think so. Mm. Steve Baird, brother of John, who's not here this week, has an exhibition coming up too in Bright Space. They are a very, very artistic family. That's on opens on the 16th of February and runs through until probably roughly the same date in March. I suspect we might get Steve on the show in the future. Le Mans Anglaise returns to 45 Downstairs. It's all French here today, Mark, isn't it? Mm. After two sellout shows last year, it stars Rob Meldrum and Gillian Murray. And that's 45 Downstairs, 7th to the 19th of February. Get in quick to get tickets if you want to see that.
If you've just tuned in, you've missed Arts About.
Yes, you have.
But you can catch up with the show via podcast, which should appear on the station website sometime in the future.
If we're lucky. The show's also repeated on air and streaming Wednesdays at 12. You can find a link to our Facebook page on the RPP website. So join Mark, myself. I think John will be back next week, Sunday at 11.
Yes, John.
Thank you, Brody. And remember, everybody, we may not know everything about art.
But what was the rest? We know the concept of failure.
Something like that.
Yeah, something like that.